Hey, and welcome to the Android Central podcast for August 22nd, 2019. That's a Thursday. My name is Daniel Bader. This week, Note 10, Android 10, and a mini Nest. Oh, wait, no, that's Nest Mini. Joining me for this episode is Andrew Martinick, fresh off a crazy week of writing. I think you must have written more words than Hemingway this week, although he wasn't.
He didn't write many words this week, so I definitely haven't beat this week.
True. You are more prolific than Hemingway in 2019. And welcome back, Ara Wagner. How was your time away from the pod, away from us?
It was nice, but I've been wanting to come back. Happy to be back.
Good to have you back. So we'll jump right in. Our Note 10 review is live. Go there right now. But we did it a little different this week or this year because, Andrew, you and Hayato, he was on the previous podcast right after the announcement, you two took the phones and you sort of ran with them, literally. You used the crap out of them and then you wrote your experiences in sort of a journal diary format. Just to give the 24-hour impressions, 72-hour impressions, as that changed up until today, which is when you published your review, what, 6-7 days after you got the phone?
Yeah, and it was a really good process from kind of letting people in to, you know, where we were at along the way, but also helped us. Hayato and I both mentioned this morning that it helped us form our own ideas because, you know, getting them out there and forcing yourself to write, I think each of our updates was like 700 to 800 words. And so forcing ourselves to go through that process and knowing that we didn't have to have a fully formed opinion yet. We said up front that, like, hey, this is just how we're feeling, and we can kind of brain dump and get those ideas out, actually really helped me and Hayato both get to actual conclusions in the end a lot easier by kind of just throwing things out there and saying, oh, well, that, okay, let's reflect on that later, or let's see how this idea forms over the next couple of days. And I think it really informed my final conclusions and my review today.
So obviously your perception of a product, any product, is going to change over the course of a few days. But, you know, given that you have reviewed every note since the Note 4, how does this one? It's a better phone, obviously. It's a more complete thought. It's more mature in every way. But this year feels like the Note line is a little bit more muted. It's a little bit less anticipated than in previous years. How do you square that circle? How do you figure? Is it just that phones in general are less interesting? Or is this phone in particular less interesting?
I've definitely heard a lot of that opinion from people as I've put my thoughts on the Note 10 out there, that, you know, they rightly point out that the whole smartphone industry is kind of leveling off a little bit or stagnating or not improving that quickly. And the way that the Note has evolved in the last four generations or so is kind of just following that trend. I think the problem is that Samsung is in full control of how it chooses to differentiate the Note line from the S line, and they just haven't really been differentiated at all. At this point, at the end of my review, to just spoil it for everybody, I point out that, you know, the word Note just signifies that it has a stylus now. It doesn't actually signify that this is the absolute pinnacle of what Samsung can do, and it's different in all these different ways, and it's dramatically better than the previous one, because that's just not true anymore. The Galaxy Note 10 Plus is excellent, just top to bottom, but it's excellent in all of the same ways that the Galaxy S10 Plus is. And it then also has a stylus. And if you were to re-release a Galaxy S10 Plus today, it would just have all the same specs that the Note 10 Plus does because it's 6 months newer and there are higher end specs. And we're going to see a Galaxy S11 that's going to come out in another 6 months, and it's just going to be the same or better than the Note 10 Plus. So they're kind of just on this same pathway. And I understand that phones can't just get dramatically better every single time, but it seems like there's more of a stagnation here than I'd like to see for something like a Note that's historically pushed the envelope more.
So Ara, you've had the phone for less time than Andrew or I, but you got the blue version, so I think you win. After 24 hours, what's your impression of this massive honk of a phone?
Well, I've had it for about 24 hours at this point. I've barely set anything up on it so far. I haven't even logged into Reddit on this phone yet. I will say, yeah, blue is awesome, and Nirav is wanting to trade me for the Aura Glow because he really wants the blue too, Bader. But it's fun to use. This is the first Note that I've ever owned. This is the first Note that I've ever used in any like real capacity outside playing with one at a big Android barbecue or playing with one in a store. So it's big and it's beautiful and it's quick, and I'm looking forward to using it more and getting used to this, and then going back to a Pixel 3a or a Galaxy S10 and going, oh my god, this feels small. But for now, it's huge, and I'm looking forward to using it. I haven't opened the camera yet, and I'm looking forward to taking this phone to the park and just going wild with the camera.
Okay, so every new Samsung phone has night mode now. And, you know, for me, that's the biggest difference, I think, after, you know, coming from a P30 Pro or a Pixel 3a. And I have to say that, you know, a previous updates of Google Camera moved Night Sight into the main camera app instead of it being in the overflow menu. And that's been a big change. And the first thing I do now with a new phone is I put night mode right next to photo mode on a Samsung phone, a Huawei phone. Yeah. Doesn't matter what it is. If it has a night mode, it goes right next to my main mode because I use that way more than portrait or video or anything else. Andrew, you've had a chance to take this to a lot of different places. You've taken hundreds of photos with the Note 10. Is it a good camera? Does it stack up to the Pixel 3, the P30 Pro in all lighting conditions? And where does it excel and where does it fall down?
So it excels in all the ways, of course, that previous Samsung cameras have, in that in daylight, in even in kind of mixed lighting, like your typical kind of sunset photo or, you know, harsh lighting just coming from one side. Anytime that there's actually some sort of light available, the camera is really, really good. And Samsung's dynamic range really stands out. The colors stand out. It's incredibly sharp. And one of Samsung's biggest features in the camera for me is its consistency. Just from shot to shot, you press the button, the camera is really fast. It captures, it does its thing, and it does it pretty much the same every single time. The only place that's disappointing is the same place that Samsung's always been disappointing. Those really dark shots where I do the exact same, Daniel. I just put the night mode or whatever it's called right next to the regular camera mode, auto mode. And any time where you feel like you need to switch to that mode, you've already lost with the Note 10 Plus because it's just not as good as what Huawei does, what Google does, and honestly, even what Sony is doing with the Xperia 1, which is hilarious because we've always panned Sony's cameras for being bad in low light. And anytime that there's a little bit to work with, you get a pretty good photo. But when you have that kind of late night scene where there's really nothing to go off of in terms of light, or you're in a fully artificial light environment, you're talking about like a bar late at night or a restaurant with just candles on the tables or something like that, it's almost not worth taking a shot because it's going to be so grainy and messy whether you use night mode or not that it's just frustrating It's just extra frustrating if you're somebody like us that have used the latest cameras like a Pixel 3, etc. But it's frustrating the same way that it's the same performance as like last three generations of Samsung cameras.
I don't know about you, but I can look at Google Photos and I can just scroll through the thumbnails. And even though, you know, I'm sure both of you are the same, you take photos with many different phones and then you upload them to Google Photos and they just all get dispersed and they're all just thrown together.
Yeah.
I can tell, even from a thumbnail, what phone took a particular photo based on the color IQ, based on, you know, a bunch of different factors. And we're getting to the point now where every phone takes pretty good photos, but there's just something off, I think, about Samsung in anything but perfect lighting condition. And I'm wondering if you two can articulate what that is, because I haven't been able to really figure that out other than to say it just doesn't look quite right to my eyes.
Yeah, I can do the same thing scrolling through Google Photos, which is kind of sad, I realize. And not everybody has like those kind of side-by-side thoughts, but...
Because I was going to say, yeah, unless I'm specifically thinking of something, I take photos with one camera unless I accidentally took them with the wrong camera if I'm carrying two on me. But I don't do a whole lot of side-by-side most days in the park.
Well, yeah, not side-by-side in terms of taking the same exact photo back-to-back, but you can kind of tell there's something to a Samsung camera that in the daylight, the things that make it so great in terms of its dynamic range and its colors just don't seem to translate well to representing a scene properly in weaker lighting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much that it's grainy or that it's... I guess it's just there's some particular nuance that Samsung cameras have that, you know, where they used to be an advantage, and now it is no longer an advantage. Now it's a disadvantage. But like in terms of daylight photos, you know, I'm looking through the photos that I've taken with the Note 10 Plus right now, and they're pretty much perfect. There's really nothing to complain about. So from that perspective, I'm really happy with this camera. But putting equivalent photos, and I'm going to be doing this experiment later this week, where I'm going to take photos with the Pixel 3a, the P30 Pro, and the Note 10 Plus, and I'm going to try to figure out what exactly it is I prefer about those other two cameras.
Well, and of course, the Pixel 3 in particular is one of these cameras that's a love-hate relationship, because the camera app can be slow and fiddly, and it can sometimes produce photos that are a little kind of bland or too neutral. You know, it's not like that's perfect, but the low light capabilities of that camera are so good. They're so way beyond everything else that you're kind of willing to give up some of the other, you know, parts. And I feel like I just wish that Samsung would do a little bit of the same. It's really good at so many things in the camera department that it's just frustrating, because I know that Samsung didn't have to do anything. It just had to pick up the S10's cameras and put them over here. It didn't have to, and nor did it say that it did, add anything in terms of the daylight capabilities or the sensors or anything. So it's like, well, what did you do? You should have spent some time improving the clear weakness of the camera there. That's kind of the frustrating part. And it's tough to put your finger on it, because it's kind of a nitpicky thing. Because like you said, in so many cases, the photos are kind of perfect that you feel bad pointing out and saying that the low light performance isn't very good. But it just isn't. It's just
no. It's really
you just know it when you see it, and it's tough in a review scenario as well, because I put low light photos in my Note 10 review, and they're good because I picked the four good photos that I took in over a week of taking low light photos. I picked the whatever it is, three, four, and a couple from Hayato that were really good. It's like I took hundreds of photos to get four good ones. And that's a problem.
Right. Yeah, we talked a lot about the phone specs in the previous podcast. So we're not gonna rehash that, but I just wanted to talk about this fourth depth camera because I've been playing a little bit with it. And there's this 3D scanning feature that's really hard to find. I had to search for it. And the reason it's hard to find is because you have to go into the camera app and then go into the Bixby Vision part of the camera app, which nobody dares tread because you don't want to get lost in there. You might get kidnapped and never see your family again. But if you go into that and you go into the apps menu, there's all of these apps where you can use Bixby Vision to like try out new makeup or style you can try sunglasses, and they're all sponsored by these different companies. There's a dedicated AliExpress app in there for some reason.
I just had flashbacks.
To what?
Nothing. Teen makeup nonsense. Oh,
yeah. So then there's this 3D scanner feature that for some reason isn't in the app right now, but you can go and you can download the APK and you can add it into the app. So anyway, I did that yesterday and I found this owl figurine that was very textured, and this thing is supposed to be able to scan, you walk around an object and it does a high resolution scan of this object and uploads it to your photo to the phone, and it processes it and creates a 3D model, and that can then go into any CAD application. So our colleague James Bricknell, I sent him the CAD file and he uploaded it because he actually 3D prints things. That's what his hobby is, and he writes a lot of 3D printing content for Mobile Nations. He said that while it captures a lot of detail in the texture on the surface, the actual 3D model itself is very, very low resolution.
Interesting.
So, and as a result, if you are meaning to print something with a lot of like nooks and crannies, a lot of minor alterations in the depth map, where if you're trying to get a figurine and there's like fingers or toes, something where the deviations in distance are very minor, it's not going to pick that up because it's actually a very low resolution camera. It's only VGA, so 640 by 480. And as a result, it's not picking up very much depth information. It's only picking up a tiny amount of depth information. So this is a good thing because it allows you to do a whole bunch of cool stuff that you couldn't do before. But it's also a very rudimentary solution to something that Samsung is really banking on, along with many other companies, AR, as being this next big thing. And we've heard for years that Apple is working on dedicated AR glasses, that they're trying to push AR in the App Store because future iPhones will have dedicated AR hardware. We know that Google has moved away from dedicated AR hardware with Tango, and they're going to be, they've sort of incorporated it into software and into other things as well. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, like, this fourth camera seems like it could be a big seller, a big reason to buy the Note 10 Plus over the S10 Plus or even the Note 10 Minor. What do you think? Is it something even people are going to care about?
I would love to say that it made the experience dramatically different, but the problem is that other than the scanning thing, it's also supposed to help with live focus photos, which is their kind of blur out
behind
the background,
the
or apply different little things, backgrounds and things. They're supposed to be able to do that better in photos and in video, and it's not appreciably better than what other phones are doing, even Samsung's own phones without the depth sensing camera. And so I love the idea of the dedicated depth sensing camera. as you point out, though, Daniel, the execution is not there in terms of the granularity of the depth map. And that completely plays out in the live focus effects, both in video and photos. They're just still not great. And they're, you know, they work, but they're things that are frankly really, really hard to do properly. And the human eye and brain is really good at telling when something is not right in respect of backgrounds being blurred out artificially. And it's like, yeah, it's really cool, but in practice, it's not going to be something that's going to make somebody buy a Note 10 Plus. The thing that would really make them buy it is if the low light capabilities were as good as the Pixel 3, and nobody would give, you know, two thoughts to whether it has a VGA depth camera on the back.
So the other part of this, you know, you mentioned it does live focus video. I think the S10 5G also did that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because that was the only S10 that had a depth camera as well.
Right. But this has specialized and far improved video stabilization. And you took that for a spin water skiing, which I'm super jealous about. And the stabilization looked amazing.
And I was on the boat, not being towed behind the boat. By the way, that
although
would
if
be
you
a
had
lot
been
tougher.
Water skiing while filming, I think you would have taken this review to like a whole new level of amazing. Just saying.
But yeah, so that's an example of this didn't require new hardware. This was new software processing, new software that pulls the sensors to manage video stabilization more often, and they. It just improved. It just got better. And it's something, it's not something you had to turn on. It's very non-Samsung-y, actually. It's not a separate setting. It's nothing you can turn on or off. It's just every time you take a video, it's more stable. And those are the nice improvements that you like to see. They're easy to show off. They're easy to sell a phone based on. And like, those are the kinds of improvements I love to see in the camera.
And the stabilization is like legitimately amazing.
It's really good.
The only limitation is that you can't access it when you're shooting at 4K 60. Mm-hmm. But I mean, good luck with getting great stabilization from any phone shooting 4K 60. Just the amount of data that it's capturing is so great that it doesn't even make sense. So let's talk about something, Ara, that I think we, you and I and Jerry have been trying to figure out and report on over the last few days. So the Note 10 Plus supports 45 watt wired charging, which is really fast. And when we heard about this, we were under the impression that it would adhere to the USB power delivery standard and that every single 45 watt or greater charger would just work with the Note 10 Plus and it would provide 45 watts of power, at least for some of the charging, because obviously no phone gets the maximum charge for the entire time it's charging. And we discovered very quickly that that's not the case. In fact, you need a very specific type of USB power delivery charger with a feature called PPS, or programmable power supply, to hit those speeds. And anything that does not support PPS, you can only get 15 watts of charging, which is the equivalent of previous Note devices. So this kind of all blew everything up because, you know, we were like, oh, great, Samsung's finally adhering to an open standard. And that's still the case. But there's a ton of confusion over whether your laptop 60-watt charger is going to give the Note enough juice to hit those speeds. So let's talk about that a bit.
Well, it's not just that you need the PPS power delivery charger. You also need an earmarked cable. And that's another thing that's one of those things of it's not very... Like, PPS is one of those things of it's part of the power delivery 3.0 standard, but it's not required for the power delivery 3.0 standard. You have to have it on top of that. And most chargers haven't implemented that yet. Like, trying to find some of these that we have any sort of confidence in has been difficult, which is why I think Samsung's 45-watt charger is probably going to sell in decent numbers, because for $50 in that size, that's probably about as good as it's going to get until we have some more options from Aukey and RadPower and Anker. Because RadPower doesn't
right
have
now,
any.
They're all scrambling to get those PPS chargers out the manufacturing line.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that there's going to be tons of them coming out either later this year or early next year. But for now, it's slim pickings out there, and when I started looking in earnest for PPS chargers, I just left out 45 watts entirely and just went straight to laptop chargers. Like the 60 and 65 watt chargers, I had much better luck finding a programmable power supply than I did down in the lower end of the spectrum.
Okay, so just to give like a brief layman explanation for PPS, and I'm not the expert here, but this is how I understand it. With USB power delivery, you generally have standard voltages and ampere or voltage and current combinations that you can adhere to. So there's, you know, the popular, 5 volts, 2 amps, there's 5 volts, 3 amps, there's 9 volts, 2 amps, there's, 20 volts, 2 amps, things like that. These are part of the standard that most power delivery chargers can provide. And when, depending on where in the charge cycle your phone is, it'll either provide more current or more voltage, which will balance out the heat. But when you jump from one of those combinations of voltage and current to another, there's a bit of power loss and conversion loss depending on the voltage of the battery and how much your battery is charged. So PPS allows the charger to provide much more granular amounts of voltage. You can basically do anywhere from 3 volts all the way to 22 volts at different levels of current. So you can kind of amp up that voltage as you get closer to 100% on a much more granular level while maintaining the current at 2 or 3 amps. And if you don't know what any of this stuff means, doesn't matter. All you need to know is that it basically makes your battery cool.
It keeps your battery from overheating, which should help keep your battery better longer.
Yes.
You don't want your battery heating up a whole lot, and especially you don't want your battery heating up a whole lot every time you charge your phone, because that will degrade your battery over time.
Right. And Samsung has a history of exploding batteries, so it does not want to ever repeat it. So if it were to come out with a massively fast charging standard, which it has, 45 watts is the fastest basically on the market for single cell, and we can go into what the difference is. They need to make sure that the batteries are going to be safe. And initial testing shows that the battery, at least for the 25-watt charger, doesn't produce any more heat than traditional 15-watt chargers of previous Samsung phones. So the company has done the right thing here.
And the fact that they're going with a standard is doubly the right thing, because everyone else so far has not done that. They've gone with something that requires a special charger, special cable to also get to the same result, way faster charging with less heat. But it's not something that is ever going to be expanded beyond buying those first party accessories from that company.
Right. So that's actually a really good point, Andrew. So, you know, a lot of people are going to say, and they have said to me, well, how is this different than Huawei's Supercharge or OnePlus's Warp Charge? Because those require specialized adapters and cables. But the reality is that Samsung is adhering to an open standard, and that once more companies develop chargers with PPS included, it's going to be really easy to find 45-watt plus chargers for this phone.
And frankly, the fact that Samsung's including it may be the spur that companies need. As we've seen with wireless charging, and frankly, with a lot of the wired chargers, a lot of the stuff stuck around at Quick Charge 2.0 and was really slow to adopt power delivery in the first place because Samsung didn't support it. And and Samsung only up to this point, they did support power delivery, but only up to like 14 or 15 watts. And so there was really no incentive because Samsung is, you know, it is the leading device maker that people are going to be buying extra chargers for rather than just using the thing in the box. And so, you know, companies just stuck with it. And so hopefully, maybe it's not now, maybe it's with the Galaxy S11 or whatever, but hopefully this does spur more of these PPS chargers to come out.
And Ara, you'd mentioned E-marked cables. So why don't you just give a quick explanation of what that is? Because most people have no idea what kind of USB cables they own.
Well, and this is another thing where it gets kind of confusing and I'm not a big fan of it because I don't want to dig too much into USB cables. I just want them to work. But for earmarked cables, the easy way to tell if you have an earmarked cable is if it's a cable that can do 10 gigabit per second. Because in order to be certified for 10 gigabit per second data transfer, you have to have an earmarked cable, which has been the easy way for us to tell which cables will work with the Note 10 Plus. But earmarked cables have these little chips in the connectors that talk to the charger and talk to the device that they are plugged into in order to say, okay, this is the cable I have. This is what I can take. Here's what you can give me. And it keeps things safer, which is another reason that Samsung probably went with, okay, we're going to use this standard and you have to use these cables in order to use it.
So the issue here is that there have been USB-C cables for many years now, C2C specifically. And the first generations were based on the USB 2.0 standard, which went up to 480 megabits per second. The second, and I think the most ubiquitous, was USB 3.1 Gen 1, which went up to 5 gigabits. And I think that has been where most people have been receiving their free USB-C cables. Like, if you think, how have most people accumulated USB-C cables? Unless you buy them from Amazon, you're getting them through your manufacturer. Although not many companies give USB-C to C cables. Like, as far as I know, Google is the only manufacturer that puts a C2C cable in the box, or at least until now.
As Samsung didn't until now. This is the first C2C or USB-C charger they've shipped in a box.
And even most Chromebooks come with a regular laptop power supply with a USB-C port rather than a C2C cable. Pixelbook's like one of the only ones.
Yeah, integrated cables was one of the best ways to get around a lot of these, you know, questions or incompatibilities. Apple obviously is really good about that because their cables always detach from their bricks, but that was a rarity.
So I guess the question is, like, if people aren't sure what kind of cables they have, should they just throw out their USB-C cables and buy a whole bunch of new ones?
No.
Or is it worth, like, putting things into perspective?
It's still worth having USB 3.1 Gen 1 C2C cables around for charging. Because even if your Note 10 Plus can't use them, most of the other USB-C devices in your home probably can.
Right.
Like the Pixel phones, don't care if it's earmarked or not. They're going to use your cable and they're going to try and charge at the full 18 or 27 watt wired charging. Can y'all remember which one the Pixel 3a uses?
18, I believe.
18.
Okay, yeah. And for 18 watt charging, pretty much either Gen 1 or Gen 2 of 3.1 is fine, and even some USB 2.0 C2C cables, I think, work with that. Again, things with USB cables get kind of screwy sometimes, and it's really hard to keep all of that straight, which is why we keep Jerry around to pester for all these questions. But, or at least that's what I pester him about most of the time. But for cables, you don't need to throw them out just because they're not earmarked. It just means you're not going to get the top speed charging with it. You'll still charge at 15 watts with a non-earmarked cable in a 45 watt PPS charger. And even then, 15 watts isn't fast. It's not the 40, it's not the full speed, but it's still useful.
So what I found really interesting is that when I plug my Note 10 Plus into charge, it goes down to 5 watts when the screen is on. And it only ramps up again when the screen is off. And I'm sure other phones do this, but I find it really interesting that Samsung is not messing around with this. Like,
I remember that being the case on the Note 9 as well, I believe. When I was comparing Note 9 and... it was either S9 and Note 9 or Note 9 and S10 charging speeds. I noticed the same thing, a big drop off when the screen came on.
Which is probably in the interest of keeping the heat down. Because that's something I'll notice a lot when charging if I'm carrying my phone around the parks with a power bank.
Yeah, everything about Samsung's newest phones is in the interest of keeping heat down. And that extends to a heat pipe, a copper heat pipe that was installed in the Note 10 Plus to push heat from the battery away from the components as quickly as possible so that it can evaporate away from... uses the metal frame to essentially disperse heat. This Samsung claims is the thinnest heat pipe ever built for a phone. Andrew,
weird flex, but okay.
Yeah, like really, it's like I want a bigger one so it can dissipate more faster, please.
So Andrew, among like all of these quirks, the one thing that I found is that the power button on the left side of the phone has actually been a little maddening. Like,
oh man, I thought you were going to agree with me for a second.
No, I disagree with you. I actually don't like it at all. I find it to be really frustrating.
The only time I don't like it is when I'm trying to do a screenshot, and even then I can kind of fat finger both of them at the same time.
So I'm wondering, yeah, both of you don't seem to have an issue with it.
I don't.
How did you get used to it so quickly?
I think it's because I really didn't like how high up the right side that the S10 Plus put the power button. And I was the person that even until 2 weeks ago was still accidentally pressing the Bixby button on the S10 Plus because I don't know. My brain doesn't work like that. So when I picked up the Note 10 Plus, I was just so relieved that the button was far enough down where it belongs that I didn't care that it was on the left or the right. And yes, it's a little bit awkward as a righty that holds his phone in his right hand most of the time that you have to press it with your index finger rather than your thumb. But I would rather have it low and on the left than high and on the right. I think it's a better trade-off to have it on the left and lower down.
See, that's why it works for me. I hold my phones in my left hand. And especially when you have the Note with the S Pen in my right, I hold my phone in my left hand and I can just tap the power button with my thumb without having to move my other hand up.
Right. What's your frustration with it, Daniel?
I don't know. I find it awkward, and I haven't grown comfortable with like just this notion of I have to use my middle finger to turn on the screen, or I have to use my middle finger to turn off the phone. I have to hold it in my left hand
for either of those. You can double tap to wake the screen.
Well, no, I do that. But just to turn it off, I mean, when I'm holding it on my right hand.
Yeah, there's launchers that'll add that for you.
Oh, the own launchers, yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, I understand. I understand that there's a little bit of that awkwardness of turning it off sometimes. Like I said, if you're holding it in your right hand, it's a little funky sometimes. I'm just saying that awkwardness does not at all outweigh the benefit of not having the dedicated Bixby button there and having the power button high on the side where it was already, frankly, a little tough to reach with your thumb because it was so high up. So I don't think it's the best situation. I think that even a little bit lower and on the right would be better. That's kind of your ideal spot. That's just where a lot of companies have landed. I just think that it's definitely not worse than the S10 Plus's position.
No, you're not wrong there. And I will say that the ease at which you can turn off Bixby on this phone is
wonderful.
Greatly appreciated.
It's fantastic.
I was so scared when I got this phone I was going to be like hitting the Bixby, hitting the power button and accidentally turning on Bixby. And I'm just like, oh, I can completely just keep Bixby away from this button. Awesome. I'm sold. Sold.
You know what's massively shifty, though, is the first time that you open Bixby and you accept the terms, say, yeah, I want to turn Bixby on, it automatically takes over the double press that is by default set to the camera because it's a Samsung standard. So as soon as you open Bixby and agree to the terms, it automatically remaps the double press to the Bixby launcher.
See, that's why you just don't turn it on. Like, I haven't opened the Bixby app and I don't intend to.
Like, the beauty about it is that with the S9 and S10 and all of them, you actually
you had to turn them on in order to disable them. This time you don't have to do that.
But even worse, you have to log into a Samsung account to turn them on, to turn them off, to disable them.
Yeah, that's all gone. It's just not on now.
Yeah, you just don't even have to do any of that. It's brilliant.
Which is great. I'd rather have to turn on these extra features than have to turn them all off. And granted, there's still a couple of them that you have to configure and turn off, like opening the air motion menu or whatever when the S Pen is ejected.
Yeah. And actually, Samsung Pay is still like the old Bixby where it's on by default, like the quick launch for Samsung Pay. And the only way to get to the setting to turn it off is to log in and set up the app, and then you can turn it off. So that's Samsung still, you know, the old habits die hard. I think that's kind of just the general ethos of Samsung software. But the kind of nearly 180 turnaround on Bixby is pretty hilarious to be observing in what is a very short amount of time.
It's a wonderful development, and I hope it continues. I hope they migrate it to the S10 and allow us to just use it to open an app like the old Galaxy Active models. Because I'm a dreamer.
All right. What else can we talk about? I mean, no headphone jack. I don't think any of us are going to miss it.
I'm done complaining about it. I know that a lot of people, like, this is the hill that they're going to die on. But it's, you know, you're going to die on it because it's not coming back. And soon there will be no opportunity. Like, there will be no phone that you can choose that will have a headphone jack.
My biggest question for those people is, why do you like having your phone tethered to your ears and having this cable that's just going to snag and tear on whatever is around you? Like, yeah. I lived with headphone, like, snaking my headphone wire up my shirt all through middle school. Well, not middle school, but all through high school and college with my old iPod Video. Like, come on, guys. Do you really want to go back? You want to stay there instead of having no wires and nothing to snag and nothing to yank your $1,000 phone out of your hand and send it crashing to the ground? Really?
I've definitely dropped phones because I had headphones plugged into them.
Yeah, and I see it all the time, and I'm just like, but there's a better way. Do you have 5 minutes to talk about Bluetooth?
Our Lord and Savior Bluetooth.
Do you have 5 minutes to talk about our Lord and Savior wireless?
But speaking of audio, we should talk about the speaker situation, because I think that's actually something to get have opinions on, if not be frustrated by.
Okay, give me.
The top speaker is weird, man.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you're talking about with that. You and Michael and everybody else were like, "Oh, it's rattling." I'm like, "I don't feel any of that."
I haven't used the speakers yet. What's going on with this?
So the bottom speaker is a normal, like, Samsung loudspeaker. It's basic. It's whatever. It just, you can cover it up, which is kind of frustrating, but that's what it is. The top speaker is, like, inside the phone. So there's a little slit in the glass at the very top, which is ostensibly the loudspeaker output. But the speaker is not there. The speaker is, like, further inside. And so it kind of just rattles the top third of the phone. And the audio just kind of comes out everywhere, which on one hand is amazing for phone calls, because phone calls are crystal clear and you don't have that very specific area where you have to have the phone held up to your ear. Yes, folks, some people make phone calls. It's this weird thing that happens. You can actually just, it's almost like the LG G8, but not that good, where you can just put the phone up to your ear and it just sounds good. It's fine.
See, if they had stolen the thing from the LG G8, that would have been awesome.
They could have, but this is kind of the next best thing. But the problem is when you have, you're watching whatever, you're watching a YouTube video or you're listening to a podcast or whatever, there's this weird audio separation because you have very directed audio coming out of the bottom or the side, whatever you want to in landscape. And then you have very dispersed audio coming out of the other side of the phone. And it's kind of that imbalance that's just a little funky because it's very focused on one side, more dispersed and kind of rattly at higher volumes on the other side. Now, the audio doesn't distort. The speaker is actually good up to its maximum volume, which is nice. It doesn't like start crackling or cause any problems like that. It's just, it's one of those things that once you hear it, you're just like, oh, this is kind of awkward. And it's not the balanced stereo sound that Samsung would like to tell you that it has.
I mean, it's fine. Like, it's not amazing that I'd take it over a mono speaker.
I agree.
I mean, are we really expecting like cinema grade sound out of a phone? I mean, $1,100 should buy you a lot, but I'm still not buying that it has to be like completely perfect audio and it's the two speakers are two drastically different sizes and shapes.
No, it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be like that. It's just not fantastic. It's not as good as I think the S10 is way better because it's more balanced. It's two dedicated speakers.
I mean, anything that encourages people to use headphones and regular Bluetooth speakers instead of watching or listening to a YouTube video on their phone with the volume up in public. And yeah, I see that literally every day at the park.
All right, let's finish this off by talking about the screen, because I think, you know, this is where a lot of people are going to get this phone's first impression. The centered camera cutout is tasteful. I don't find it distracting.
It's good.
The screen is insane. It's bright. It's the color calibration is perfect. I mean, I haven't had anything to complain about with Samsung screens for years. This is beyond good. It's perfect, basically.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's just no, if you could complain about it, but you know, you'd be crazy because there's no other phone you could buy that would be better. So what are you comparing it to that you're complaining?
I guess we could talk about Dex, but I don't really want to.
Yawn.
But Dex is cool.
It's not. It's bad.
No.
I mean, granted, I'd rather use a Chromebook any day of the week than use Dex for more than like 10 minutes as a novelty. But it's still a fun, useful thing for very targeted audiences.
Yeah, maybe once it stops like bugging out, it needs like a really big software update before it works reliably. Maybe in a couple of weeks when that update happens, we'll be able to talk about it without hating on it. So
the connection to the computer is pretty jank right now.
Oh yeah, it's bad. All right, any last thoughts on the Note 10 before we move on?
Go read my review. I put thousands and thousands of words into it, and it has way more opinions than I could ever condense into one podcast.
It's true. And then if you want to disable Bixby, search for it on Google, because it's actually pretty easy this time. All right. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Android 10. Yes. Stay tuned. This week's episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Thrifter. Thrifter is the place that you need to go to get the best deals in your inbox every day. The reason we love Thrifter, I mean, they're part of the Mobile Nations family, so obviously we love them. But we go there because they are the best. They have the best team at rounding up all the deals you need. I'm on their homepage right now, and there is a pack of 20 batteries for $6. If you are always running out of batteries, you gotta get this deal. $6 for 20 batteries. That's like 4 cents a battery, because I'm really good at math. No, but seriously, there's a newsletter that Thrifter releases every morning. It gets to your inbox at the crack of dawn, and tells you about all the deals that you should be interested in for that day. You can dig into specific categories if you're only into tech deals, if you're into kitchen deals, gaming, whatever, your fancy headphones. Thrifter has you covered. And especially around the big shopping holidays, we're talking Prime Day, Black Friday. This is the time when you want to get ready for Thrifter, because they are going to be the place that you want to go every hour to make sure that you're staying up to date on all the best deals. So if you're ready to start saving money, go to thrifter.com, check out the deals there, and then sign up for their newsletter. You will not be sorry. Again, that's Thrifter, thrifter.com. All right, we are back, and we are talking about Android Q 10. It's the same thing now. Android 10 was revealed to be the name of the next version of Android. It is not Android Quince or Android, what was Alex's favorite one? Queen of Cake?
Queen Cake.
It's just Android 10. That is the official name. And to go along with the official name, Andrew, they revealed a bunch of updates to the Android branding, they being Google. It's a little bit more rounded. It's a little bit cleaner and more mature, but perhaps a little bit more boring. So walk us through what that looks like.
I think mature is a really good word for it, because it's an evolution of the brand. It's definitely not dramatically different. You really have to, especially in the word mark itself, just the lowercase Android writing, when you see the 2014 redesign to today's redesign, it's not huge, but they made a lot of little tweaks that actually had an eye toward consistency and readability and usability. Actually, the kind of bright, more yellow heavy green of the previous Android brand didn't make a lot of sense, because it can conflict with a lot of different colors that it was being laid on. The green looked really good on white or black, but it didn't look good on anything else. So now they moved the word mark to be neither black or white for contrast on top of any color. And it includes the robot head. You'll never see the word in a branding term, the word Android without the robot head next to it. That's now part of the word mark, which is really interesting. Whether that Android wording and head are side by side or stacked or just, you know, adjacent in some way is different depending on the application. But that combination kind of brings back a little bit of the playfulness that was lost in having the Android wording just be a word. And the double trade-off on the other side is that the robot's body is now gone. There's no more walking around or waving or, you know, anything like that. It's just the head. And the head itself is more expressive. It can move the, you know, its eyes around, or its antennas. I don't know what the
antenna
the antenna. It can move those around and kind of give off different expressions, but the body is gone. And so that's definitely a maturity point as well, that it's not this kind of nerdy insidery thing that's propagated around the world with this robot. It's just the head left over, and it's part of the word, so you're going to see more of it. I think it's an overall improvement. And when you pair it up with this new set of colors, they have a new color palette that has a new green with less yellow in it. It also includes a navy blue, a kind of lighter blue, and a sky blue, and also an orange and Daniel's favorite color, chartreuse, that can be used interchangeably with the word mark and with the Android head to kind of have a more comprehensive Android brand rather than just this bold green Android word and that's it.
It's really interesting that they simplify and modernize the text while augmenting that new font with the Android head in every iteration. And this comes after years of Google seeming to move away from using the Android branding in a lot of its applications.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not so much that they're getting rid of Android. That was never going to be the case, despite lots of speculation. But that now they're only using Android for very specialized cases around literally the Android ecosystem. And I know that sounds obvious, but as Google has diversified, or at least bifurcated as a company, Android is now an element of its hardware division, but it's not its entirety. And then Android as a division within Google is very much still trying to meet that initial endeavor of like bringing free software to billions of people. This is where it makes sense, and where the modernization sounds like it'll be very helpful for the next 10 years of Android.
And the other part of that modernization is that this new word mark and the robot head are no longer Creative Commons licensable. Everything up to this point, even including the entirety of the Android robot and the colors and the branding from the 2014 refresh, are all Creative Commons licensing. So anybody can riff on it and make the robot do anything it wants and use the color and all this sort of stuff, and Google doesn't care. But now the color palette and the wording and the robot head all have to be, the usage has to be approved by Google. And they're not going to be really strict about it, but they do have guidelines for partners on how they can use the colors, how they can distribute it, how it's going to show up in their software and their marketing and their branding. And so there's just a little bit of control being exercised there. And you can see that Google's kind of just, like you said, narrowing the scope of where Android is going to be used to, frankly, just give it some focus that I think it's needed for a while, because, man, it is completely, like, when you look across the world and the way that people are using the robot and the Android name, it's so generic at this point that it's really tough to give it the focus that it needs so that people understand what Android is.
And I mean, this also comes after Google forced OEMs to include the powered by Android branding on all Android-powered phones.
Right.
So, you know, as much as companies like Samsung may try to get away from mentioning that its phones are powered by Android, that's literally one of the first things you see when you power up a Galaxy Note 10 Plus is powered by Android. And I assume with a future software update, you'll see this new version in there.
Yeah, and that also just spills over to the other part of this, that the desserts or tasty treats are gone, and we're going to see a narrower focus. You're going to see Android 10 or Android 11 or Android 12 on your phone. It's just kind of making it all a little easier to explain to people, a little easier to understand across devices and across regions. They made the really good point when I was talking to Google ahead of this announcement that some of their representatives said, well, just think about it. These desserts or tasty treats or whatever don't make sense in terms of alphabet, pronunciation, just having an analog in different countries. They don't make sense across the world. Not every culture has an eclair or nougat, or however you pronounce nougat where you live, or a marshmallow, or, you know, what the hell is honeycomb in terms of a tasty treat. It didn't make sense to people across different areas. And so it's just all about, again, narrowing that focus so that you can say, do I have Android 10 or do I have Android 11? It's not, do I have whatever, like queen cake or pie or lollipop or marshmallow? You don't have to deal with that problem anymore.
It makes more sense. It's just less fun.
It is less fun. And I mean, so many of the comments are like, oh, this is boring. We're just seeing Google copy Apple again. But like, what choice did they have? What were they going to call Q? I mean, if they didn't do it with Q, they were going to have to do it with Z. Or, you know,
yeah.
It just, I don't know, it makes no sense.
I understand from the fun standpoint.
Z,
is,
sorry, I'm Canadian.
See, exactly. It's, you know, that would have been a thing that would have come up at some point. But you don't have, the fun part of that. You don't have the speculation. All of the enthusiast crowd won't have that as much anymore, although Google did say they're gonna have code names internally. Like, Google has code names, every other company has code names for the things that they do. People are going to find those out, and there's going to be plenty of speculation about what the internal code name is. That's kind of cool as it stands.
Well, we're just didn't they not say the one for R was already picked and it was something Indian?
They very, I have no doubt that they are already kicking around, you know, R, S, T, you know, and on and on. They already have, that's just what they do, because the people inside Google making Android are just as big a nerds as any of us. And so they're going to continue to do that stuff. We just won't get the outside branding exercise of, you know, making the statue that looks like the thing and doing the cool Easter egg and all that kind of stuff in the software. But the thing is that 99.9% of people didn't care about that. They were just more frustrated of, you know, why don't I have this version? Or what does it mean to, you know, have this number but that name or whatever? It wasn't practical, even though it was kind of fun. And I think that it's still, it's a net positive to give it more practicality and take away a little bit of the fun. Sorry, folks.
Again, it makes all the sense in the world. And I mean, changing from desserts to letters still, from desserts to numbers still isn't going to change the fact that most phones still aren't getting updated in a timely manner.
Oh, sure.
And that's something I care about way more than the name. But, and again, that's something that Google hasn't seemed to be able to fix in the last 5-6 years, and I don't really see them getting it fixed in the next 2 or 3, even with Project Mainline.
Okay, but hang on. What is your interpretation of Google fixing this? Like, how does Google fix it? What does that look like to you? Is it iOS style, every phone on Earth gets an update to the new version on the same day? Or is it more reasonable than that?
It needs to be more reasonable than that, but at the same time, that most phones that you buy today do not get... that most phones you buy on the market right now do not see an Android version update ever is horrible. And I do wish that Android One was used more widely in Western markets. I'm happy that it's coming to more and more phones here, but especially the number of lower end phones that it's just you buy it and that's it. That's what you get. If you see a security update, you were lucky. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't know how to fix that other than forcing lower-end phones to Android One, which wouldn't work.
Yeah, from that perspective, you at least hope that Google's, you know, commit, like, it's showing commitment, like I think Daniel mentioned this earlier, it's showing a commitment to the Android brand. They're not going to get rid of the Android brand here. You don't go through this whole rebranding design exercise if you're just going to kill it off and change it to something else.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that Google's aware of this problem. It's just a really, really hard problem to fix. It's not letting Android just, you know, out to pasture to die. It's actually the opposite. It's taking more control of the brand, shows an investment in Android. And you hope that that's, you know, tied to some additional investment in trying to figure out the update problem too.
And I mean, I wish we could get to a point where Android phones were like Google Chromebooks, where not every Chromebook gets the update at the same time, but since every Chromebook gets updated by Google, they all get updated in a timely manner. And that's every, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we're beating a dead horse here because Google ceded control to the carriers and the carriers screwed it up. But
carriers screwing something up? Shocking.
But it's also, I think, laudable that Google has tried to claw back some of that control. And they've done a pretty good job, right? Mainline is going to fix more of the things that trouble started. And, you know, whether your phone gets a platform update does not necessarily mean that they'll never get security updates, which even if your phone doesn't get security updates, won't mean that they won't get updates through the Play Store through Mainline. And I know that that's, you know, a lot of moonshot stuff there, but I do think that for really, really critical patches, Google will be able to fix them through the Play Store. And that's a big deal. That's, I think, the biggest deal here.
It is. And Google Play services being able to patch as many of the security updates that it does right now is impressive.
Right. And it,
but it could just be more.
It could be more, and it should be more, and we'll never stop wanting more for Android, but alas. And I mean, the other part of it too is, you know, it's our job to tell people, hey, if software updates are important to you, if security is important to you, which they should be, buy a Pixel, buy an Android One phone. At least there, you're guaranteed these updates. Most people choose not to do that, or they choose not to hear the message.
I mean, at least Samsung's gotten a little bit better with at least quarterly security updates.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Android with the Pi rollout with One UI went much smoother than I thought it would. So maybe
that's
there is
hope. And I think that hopefully, I mean, Samsung will update the S9 and S10 and, you know, newer phones to Q, but it would be really great to see the S8 updated to Q, given that they received two platform updates already. But
did they say they're updating the S9? I don't think they did.
Because that'll be two years old. I don't think they've said it, but they probably will. I mean, if the S8 and Note 8 got Pi, the S9 should get Q.
I sure hope so.
I mean, no excuse.
You mean Android 10.
Sorry. Yes.
I'm going to be that guy. Sorry.
I'm going to keep calling it Q. I don't mind.
Yeah,
if
I mean,
we're
going
to spend all
yet.
Summer, I still refer to Pi as P until at least after Christmas.
The last thing here, Andrew, is when is Android 10 officially going to be released? Because that's still not a thing, right?
Yeah, and we're let's see, 2.5 weeks removed from the last beta, which was supposedly kind of like the finalized one. Like, as long as nothing hits the fan, that was stable, even though we're, you know, still changing around the gesture system for some reason. We should be there. We should be a week, maybe 2 weeks away from that. I haven't seen anybody talking about any show-stopping issues that would keep the problem is, if we get another beta, then we're really way, way, way behind. And the fact that they announced that it's the name is Android 10 indicates that they were kind of ready to go with the software to be stable. And the fact that we just have this brand come without any announcement, they didn't say anything about the software being stable now.
Well,
is a little funky.
All of the things that we know what's coming in Android 10, because everything that's coming in Android 10 was announced back in May. So I'm fine with this being its own little announcement. And honestly, since we didn't get the final version today, I'm just hoping that they found a way to fix the gesture nonsense. Because
that's the only thing that
I think is getting any like ridiculously strong pushback with Android 10, because everything else seemed fine.
That's the thing that I'm saying is, you know, we're pretty damn late in the game to be changing fundamental navigation paradigms. So,
the new gesture stuff didn't show up till beta 3, right?
Right, right. So it's kind of a weird, an oddly long and late timeline.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been using the Pixel 3a on beta 6 for, I guess, since it was released August 7th. And while the gestures are a lot more reliable than they were with beta 5, they're not done. And my guess is that they're still going to be pretty buggy, even when Android 10 is released officially.
Well, even using the 3 button is buggy when you use a non-standard launcher. Like, if I'm using the 3 button navigation, nothing there should be buggy at all. And it is.
That's interesting, actually. And I wonder how much that has to do with them trying to refactor gesture nav for third-party launchers, which isn't even available yet.
Well, that's the thing. Like, take out the gesture navigation at all. Just take out the gesture navigation. Three-button navigation is still buggy using a third-party launcher. That shouldn't be happening, period.
Yeah, it definitely should.
Even with whatever tweaks you're making for gestures, gestures should be its own thing compared to the classic traditional three-button navigation. And since that was something that it just, that just popped up in the latest beta, as far as I was using gestures through from beta 3 to beta 5. Beta 6 made me go back to three-button gestures, and those were buggy as the gestures had been before. That and wasn't normal.
We thought that Google had this figured out.
Nobody thought it.
Nobody thought that.
Zero people thought that, Andrew. That's the problem.
But they've had such a good history of
of consistency and being transparent about their... I mean, that's to be fair, though, this has been... They've been more transparent about the gesture issue than they've ever been before about these kinds of challenges. There was a really good series on Medium where the UX designers went in depth on how they thought through these changes, what they did in terms of experiments and research. They did a bunch of tests with the public to get their impression of what they preferred. And even though most people actually preferred three-button nav, overall, the gesture nav was more was liked by more people for one-handed use. And they know that with tall phones, one-handed use is becoming increasingly important. So they decided to just go all in on gestures, bite the bullet, go through an awkward transitional period, and hopefully come out clean on the other side.
I'm all for an awkward transition, but this should have started in beta 1, not beta 3. Because if we had the extra months to get this right, we wouldn't be talking about this now, I have a very strong feeling about.
Yeah, I mean, that was internal testing. I bet you they had working versions of this gesture from beta 1 and before. They just didn't want to roll it out to us.
Yeah, I mean, define working. I think that's kind of the problem is the execution. I don't inherently have a problem with gestures. I have a problem with things that are just straight up broken.
Yeah, like the gesture system on OnePlus and even the gesture system on Samsung, I know is a very divisive thing, but I like those. And when the gesture system works on the Q beta, it's fine. It's just that it just straight doesn't work sometimes.
Yeah, it's still not quite there, but it's getting closer, and I appreciate it because, coming from... I love the ability to swipe between apps really quickly. I think that is its saving grace.
That's definitely better than Pi.
It is. And I mean, my only thing was just like the actual multitasking menu here is a little awkward because, with Pi, like it didn't always work, but that ability to hold down the pill and then like go one by one through your previous apps to pick the right one. That was helpful. It wasn't enjoyable to use because it was really finicky. But with this one, you actually have to physically move between apps. But when doing that, it works a lot more reliably. So I don't know. I'm still of two minds about it. I think they're on the right track, but they're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. That's Google beta software in a nutshell right there.
Yep. Part of me wonders if it took them this many years that it was like the dark theme was in beta and then it got pulled. Dark theme was in beta and then it got pulled. Is there any chance they're going to do that with gestures and just revert to something that we know works?
That would be insane, but I would love to see it happen.
We had to wait 4 years for this, for the dark theme, because we had to make sure that it was right. And the dark theme isn't as vital as having a gesture having navigation systems at work, right?
I don't know. I don't like dark mode, so I'm not even going to answer that.
Oh geez, let's not kick off a second hour of this podcast, Daniel.
No, I think we'll save that for when Android 10 is actually released, and we'll go through all the apps that have dark mode, and I'll point out all the inconsistencies because there are sure to be many.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of dark theme, the new Google Play Store. Cannot wait for that dark mode. Need dark theme there immediately.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're gonna end things there. Don't want to get too long in the tooth. You got places to be and articles to write. And our listeners have articles to read, including Andrew's excellent Note 10 Plus review.
Darn right.
And we can reveal, because it's not under embargo or anything, that you're getting a Note 10, the small baby 10. And
yes.
You're also going to be writing a review on that. So if you are interested
yeah, here we go.
In learning about the small Note 10, we'll talk about that in our next week's podcast.
Absolutely. I'm excited, especially now that I have the whole basic layout of the Note 10 Plus, to see what the, after I got used to the big size, what it's going to be like going back down to something more comfortable and retaining the noteness.
We didn't talk about the Nest Mini. So, I mean, we can talk about that a little bit, but maybe we'll save that for next week. But basically, there was a leaked, there was a report from 9to5 Google this week that said Google will unveil an updated, better sounding version of the Google Home Mini called the Nest Mini, better bass. It will have a built-in wall mount, which is kind of interesting.
Smart.
And it'll have a sensor to detect distance. So if you're walking up to the speaker, it'll be able to tell that you're present and potentially negate the need for Hey G. I don't know.
Interesting.
But, I bet that's more built in for the security features. It's like, oh, you're in away mode, and I just detected sensors by the speaker.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. There could be a number of use cases for that, but I would really like it if it did that, because then I wouldn't have to say the hot word every time I did something.
Yeah, but if it's pointed towards your couch, that would mean that it would be trying to listen to everything you said while you were sitting there.
Well, then just don't put it next to your couch, Ara. God.
It could be...
Why are you raining on my fake parade here?
But what about putting it by the bed?
Oh, no.
Having it be... it is an interesting way to solve that problem that they tried to do with the touch controls on the original or current Home Mini that failed completely because, they were just active all the time. So, worth a shot?
They're worth a shot. I mean, it works. The pressing down, because I have third-party Google Assistant speakers, and they all work fairly well with being able to be triggered without saying OKG. The Sony, I have to press down the play-pause button, and that triggers Assistant. The Insignia, you press and hold the Assistant button, and that triggers it. And then the Tiktok's the same way.
Just having that option is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, among the many announcements at Google's October event this year, we can now add that to the list in addition to the Pixel 4, and we're assuming a whole bunch of other little tidbits. Hopefully getting some more information about Stadia, which I am increasingly excited for. So, and speaking of Stadia, we are having, we're doing something very cool on the AC Podcast feed. We have a new gaming podcast. It's called SideQuest, and it's going to be on the AC feed for now. It's not going to be a weekly show. It'll be a every once in a while show, but that will be hosted by our colleague Russell Hawley, who you know from many episodes of the Android Central podcast. There may be some Android Central writers on there and some special guests. And it's just to give people who love our gaming coverage, and we know there are many of you out there, another way to interact with us. So it's coming out this week. Let us know what you think. As always, send your feedback to podcast@androidcentral.com. We love hearing from you. This week's homework, tell us whether you would be bugged about the left side home button. I want to hear from you because it's a problem. But seriously, let us know what you think about the Note 10. Would you buy this phone?
It isn't
phone?
A problem.
I know.
Ara is sending you an email.
I'm just sending you a ton of Giphy gifts.
Fine. Oh, I like those. Send them my way anyway. And send us your thoughts on the Note 10 Plus. What do you think? Are you going to buy it? Do you like the S Pen? All that good stuff. That's it. My name is Daniel Bader. Ara, Andrew, thank you. You're the best.
Thank you.
Peace.